635, direct the Bureau of Emergency Communications to work in consultation with partner agencies to review standards for all call answering based upon national best practices. And 636, support robust medical dispatch triage to improve outcomes and more effectively deploy emergency response resources.
Very good. And Commissioner Saltzman has to leave, so he asked if he could say something up front.
Thank you, Mayor. I have to go fulfill my Rose Festival responsibilities and be in the junior parade. But I did want to commend Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Fritz for bringing forward both of these items. And certainly with respect to item 636, improving the 911 system for medical calls would allow the Fire Bureau to better meet the growing demand for increasing medical calls and would likely lead to decreased response times in the case of medical emergencies. Faster response times are absolutely key to increasing the Fire Bureau's ability to save lives and improve the outcomes in the case of medical emergencies. A robust and cutting-edge medical triage system would allow us to explore further innovations like telemedicine or nurse triage. Fire Chief Myers has been laser-focused on improving and innovating the medical triage system, and I know he and the entire team at the Fire Bureau will be an essential and collaborative partner in the implementation. So,
Dan, before you leave, can I just do a housekeeping matter? You'll be back at 2?
No, I won't.
So we have 6 matters, Mayor, on the agenda that have an emergency clause.
Can I have a question?
No, ma'am, just once, if we could. We have 6 emergency items. So when do you back this afternoon?
I will not be back this afternoon.
All right. Well, almost half of our agenda has an emergency clause, and well, I'll just point that out.
It's a problem. We'll have to sort it out.
And if I might just comment, Commissioner Saltzman, before you leave, I had the honor of sitting at a table with firefighters at the gathering in North Portland last night, so we had a really robust discussion about some of the things that I would hope to be involved in working with ongoing in terms of the Fire Bureau's response, particularly to mental health challenges in the community. Right. So I'd be interested to see how quickly it bubbles up to your level.
Okay.
The items before the council are about resiliency and innovation of the public safety system, as you just heard. I've certainly made resiliency and innovation one of the cornerstones of the budget process to ensure that we can effectively deploy our public safety resources to respond to a community-wide crisis if and when it happens. One addresses the findings of the Ombudsman's report. 9/11 is a vital service, and it must be evaluated accurately if the city is going to be able to make good decisions. Best practices and good data should drive our decision-making, and I believe it's the city's responsibility to address issues completely transparently. The other item will direct the city to broadly engage the leadership of our public safety bureaus, first responders, and other jurisdictional partners to ensure that Portland is providing the best service possible to the community. I don't see improved medical triage causing the city to cut first responders. Improving the 9/11 system will allow both the Fire Bureau and 9/11 to respond to increasing medical calls and focus on decreasing response time in medical emergencies. Both items are about responding to crisis more quickly, resulting in better outcomes in medical emergencies and effective deployment of public safety resources to save lives. Faster response times are key to improving our public safety system. Since taking all the bureaus back, I've become involved in these issues, and I'm committed to working with my colleagues to addressing these issues fully, engaging our partners and employees, and supporting work to make our public safety system respond to the broader needs of our community. I'd like to allow Commissioner Fritz to give her own introduction and call up Margie Solinger, Joanne Fuller, and Lisa St. Helen to give the City Council an overview of the proposal. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor, for partnering with me on this, these two resolutions. I appreciate that your office accepted several of our amended amendments to it. I think we all agree that the primary responsibility of the 911 Center, the Bureau of Emergency Communications, maybe hereafter called BOEC, the primary responsibility is to get help in the community as quickly as possible. And so that's what we're all talking about today. We're all in agreement with that. We also all, I believe, agree that we would be horrified if a pocket dial on a cell phone impacted call takers' ability to respond to an actual help call. So that is something that needs to be addressed, particularly in a bureau that has been understaffed since the recession. And we certainly all agree. We're very appreciative of all the staff in the 911 centre for the very stressful work that you do and the wonderful service you provide to our community. I was in charge of the Bureau of Emergency Communications in my first term from 9 to 12. As somebody who had previously then worked in hospitals for 27 years, I was fascinated to see the other side of the patients that we would receive on One Northwest at OHSU, for example. And appreciate the Ombudsman calling attention to the issue of cell phone handling and data reporting, both of which are extremely important. I agree with Mayor Wheeler. The work that we've been doing since January, when I was assigned the Bureau, has come, as I said, at a very difficult time. We've had a Bureau director transition, the ongoing staffing shortage, and the catastrophic failure of the Bureau's primary power supply unit in early April, something that's never happened before. So all of those issues have been primary, urgent issues to take care of, and all very important. And the budget, which we are poised to adopt tomorrow, includes 11 new dispatch positions as well as support for a replacement power supply unit. And again, thank you, Mayor, for including that in your proposal and colleagues for supporting it for the vote tomorrow. And the resolutions before us today are an opportunity to formalise the city's commitment to addressing shortages in our system. I'm also fascinated that I'm very much appreciative of the Ombudsman pointing out that there isn't any enabling legislation in City Code. And so should I be assigned the Bureau ongoing, I'm going to be very interested in leading that discussion. Just so everybody knows, though, the Bureau responds to all Montgomery County calls. So not only the county, ably represented by Joanne Fuller today, but the cities of Fairview, Wood Village, Gresham and Troutdale, as well as the unincorporated area. So we have a user board. Several of the members are here today. Many of the delegates are police chiefs, fire chiefs from those jurisdictions, and that's the policy guidance that guides decisions in the Bureau of Emergency Communication. I also have to say right up at the beginning how appreciative I am of the way that the Bureau steps up in emergencies. And just to give you an example, for the Max attack, we had 51 calls in 10 minutes. And so I know from attending some of the memorials that people were frustrated that their call was not picked up right away. When something like this happens, now that everybody carries their cell phone, the Bureau is completely flooded with reports of the same incident. And so that's something that, as we look to the future, how do we make sure that we let people know that the concern is being taken care of at the same time as continuing to look at how quickly can we get help in a situation like that. So thank you to everybody here for working on these issues.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. And Marjorie, Madam Ombudsman, I don't know why I struggle to pronounce that. Why don't you go ahead and tee us up?
Swedish. Sure. Good
thank
morning.
You.
Swedish. For the record, I'm Margie Solinger, Ombudsman for the City of Portland. I will do my best to get through this without coughing, but just fair
thank
warning.
The
first resolution before you is responsive to a pair of reports that my office issued about the city's 911 system. The first report came out last December, and the second report was publicly released today. Mayor Wheeler has been so quick to address the concerns raised in the second report that I barely was able to issue it in time for this hearing. But that's a really good problem to have. My goal is to give you a quick overview of the problems identified in the reports so that council and the public have some context for why this first resolution is being brought forward and what it's seeking to address. I first started looking into the 911 system last year when my office received a complaint alleging that the city took too long to respond to a fatal house fire. Although the allegations in the complaint were not substantiated, in the course of that inquiry, I discovered a problem with the screening device that the 911 center uses for accidental cell phone calls. The screening device, sometimes referred to as the Reno solution, was installed in 2004 because the 911 center was receiving an influx of accidental cell phone calls that were diverting operators from handling callers with real emergencies. The idea is pretty simple. Cell phone callers must prove that they are not a mistake. When you call 911 from a cell phone, recording tells you to press a key or say 911. Only callers who take one of these steps will be transferred to an operator or placed on hold if one is not available. The Reno solution accomplishes what it's designed to do. In fiscal year 15-16, for example, it screened out around 144,000 accidental calls. Unfortunately, the Reno solution also resulted in unintended consequences that have compromised the 911 center's operations and, by extension, public safety. My first report focused on one of the unintended consequences. That report detailed how the Reno solution prevents the 911 center from calling people back who successfully make it past the screening system, but who hang up or get disconnected before speaking to an operator. 911 policy requires operators to call these people back in order to determine if an emergency exists. Operators are unable to do so because the Reno solution prevents the system from retaining the caller's phone number, and operators are not apprised that the call occurred in the first place. In fiscal year 15-16, the number of 911 calls affected by this flaw was around 20,000. The report I publicly released today focuses on the Reno solution's other unintended consequence. This latest report details how the Reno solution prevented the Bureau from tracking hold times for cell phone calls that actually made it through to an operator. As a result, the answer times that the Bureau reported publicly for more than a decade have overstated, sometimes drastically, how well our 911 system is actually performing. Instead of exceeding performance measures, as reported, answer times are actually well below accepted standards. And I'll walk you through some of those details. The problem stems from measuring different intervals to calculate landline and cell phone call answer times. For landlines, the calculation is just what you would expect. The length of time it takes to answer a call is from the moment a call is received by the 911 center until an operator gets on the line. This is not the way it works with cell phone calls. And again, the Reno solution created the problem. Not only does it lose track of abandoned cell phone calls, but it also results in all successful cell phone calls being treated as if they have almost no hold times. Only the ring time interval, which is 1 to 2 seconds, has been counted toward the answer time for cell phone calls. When 75% of your calls are from cell phones, you can see how that skews the numbers. And here's an example of how this plays out. You've got two calls, both on hold for identical amounts of time. One is from a landline and one is from a cell phone. As you can see at the top, the landline call is accurately counted as being answered in 8 minutes and 17 seconds. Contrast that to the cell phone call below. Neither the 29 seconds getting through the Reno solution screening system nor the time spent on hold are counted.
Excuse me, just one second. I just ask a clarifying question. I know that some of the calls on 911 are from security systems, like alarms, that home security and such. Is that counted under the landlines or under the cell phone lines?
Neither. As I understand that those are other emergency calls. It's a separate category. So a call that took nearly 9 minutes to reach an operator is counted as being answered in 1 second. Every cell phone call has been counted this way, and as a result, the Bureau of Emergency Communications has inaccurately reported its performance to a significant degree. This misreporting was on display during the most recent budget process. The Bureau's goal is to answer 90% of 911 calls within 20 seconds. Despite chronic staffing shortages, the Bureau reported surpassing this goal by answering more than 99% of all emergency calls within 20 seconds. The Bureau also reported averaging 1 second to answer 911 calls. After discovering the undercounting problem associated with the Reno solution, I asked technology services to run the numbers using the actual cell phone call hold times. Instead of answering 99.6% of all calls within 20 seconds, the 911 center is actually answering closer to 68% within 20 seconds, well below its target service level. The Bureau's underperformance is compounded by its selection of a modest target service level. The national industry standard is that 90% of all emergency calls should be answered within 10 seconds during the busy hour. Against the national standard for any hour, the 911 center's performance is even worse. Less than 30% of 911 calls are answered within 10 seconds. As you all know, the 911 center has faced staffing problems for years, and I think the underreporting has exacerbated the problem by removing the sense of urgency. The message the council and the public have been receiving is that the 911 center has managed to provide top performance despite chronic staffing shortages. Instead, it is now clear that it is performing well below accepted standards. People's lives are at stake, and our system for responding to individual emergencies and large-scale disasters is not working very well. And at least in part, it is likely because of the inability to resolve the staffing problems. I made several recommendations in the report about ensuring accurate reporting going forward, and I'm encouraged that the resolution before you today is a concrete step toward implementing those recommendations. I'd also like to note in closing that it was through the work of now Interim Director Lisa St. Helen that the 911 Center is able to more accurately track hold time data. Director St. Helen was also critical in discovering the problem addressed in the first report.
Thanks, Nick.
She has been receptive to the recommendations I make in the report, and she is unquestionably dedicated to getting the Bureau back on track. Thank you for your time. I almost made it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Well,
why don't we
let her recover a bit? Let's go ahead and just hear the
Archie,
whole panel.
Archie, can we get you an aspirin or a lozenge or something?
All of the above. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
I'm not seeking to curry favor with the ombudsman. I just want to make sure that.
No, but it's never a bad idea.
A medical.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm next.
You're next.
Thank you. First, thank you for the opportunity to be able to come and speak regarding both of these resolutions.
Can you put
and
your
also
name in the record?
I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Lisa St. Helen, and I am the Interim Director for the Bureau of Emergency Communications. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to come and speak about the resolutions and about the Ombudsman's report. I do look at this as an opportunity to solidify our Bureau's commitment to doing exactly as the Mayor said, and that is ensuring that we are providing the best service possible to the community and to our partner service agencies. Although I have been the Interim Director for 2 months, that obviously is not a very long time, I am still able to sit here confident before you and affirm that our Bureau is absolutely willing and on board to ensure that we are operating with full transparency and probably more importantly with statistical clarity about what's happening within our Bureau. As the Interim Director and simply as a City of Portland employee, I look at myself as a public servant. I know it's a word that gets tossed around a lot, but I take that sense of obligation very seriously. The Ombudsman's report offers many recommendations, of which I am very grateful for. I believe that those recommendations, when enacted, will ensure that we are moving towards our goal of providing the best service and getting ourselves back on track. And ultimately, my hope is that in a few months, BOIC will be invited back to this table. And whoever is representing BOIC at that time, my hope is that the narrative will be different. And the narrative will be that we didn't come today and talk about cliches or talk about wanting to do better or getting back on track. The narrative will be that we did get back on track and that we recognized the errors of the past. We had a sincere desire to fix them and that we have, in fact, moved forward. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And your leadership of the Bureau and addressing this, and even before you were the Interim Director, has been exemplary, and I really appreciate working with you.
Thank you.
The question I asked the Ombudsman in terms of the alarm system calls.
I think we were going to finish out the testimony and then come back.
Oh.
We were going to hear from all three, and that was what the Mayor requested.
Do you agree with the
I apologize. I didn't hear your question. I'm sorry.
About the alarm system calls, that they're not, the Ombudsman said those aren't counted anywhere.
The alarm system calls actually come in on the 911 line, on the 911 trunk. They are prioritized below the 911 calls themselves. So anytime a 911 call comes in, it will jump ahead of any alarm call that is waiting.
But that is included in the time, the average time, the response to those?
My belief is the answer is yes. I would have to clarify with the technological person that provided that report to Margie.
Thank you. And just one other question of clarity. Does the caller on the cell phone have to actually say 911, or would any loud noise be enough to trigger it to becoming a live call?
Yeah, it actually doesn't even have to be a loud noise. We still get pocket dials that come through. It can be any noise. It can be a button push. It can be any sound. It can be 911. The sensitivity is set at a point where any type of audible noise will push it through the system.
So in a system, in an incident like the Max attack, the amount of noise that was going on there would certainly have got through to the 911 operator?
Yes, I believe
Thank
so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. It's great
Good morning.
To see you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Joanne Fuller, I'm your health department director at Multnomah County, and I'm here today to talk about Resolution 636. So you all know that by law, counties are required to develop an emergency medical plan and to contract for ambulance services. We do this in deep collaboration with all of the cities within our jurisdiction and with your emergency responders and the emergency responders from other cities and with BOEC. In 2016, as we developed the plan that our board adopted in December of 2016, we also, for the first time, deeply engaged communities, both using an equity lens, communities of color, and also users of the ambulance service system to try to get their perspective as well as the perspective of responders and the agencies that we work with. Our board, as I said, adopted our new plan in December of this last year. That plan calls for one ambulance provider across the county, which is what we have today. And when that change went into effect many years ago, that was really to end what people termed the ambulance wars, which was different ambulances racing to the same scene to try to pick up a victim. And we believe deeply that one plan with one service that works with all of the different other first responders will create the best service possible for our community. In addition to that, the plan also calls for us to implement a more modern, robust system for discriminating between the urgency of an acuity of different calls. This is a technology that's used in cities across the country, and it will really allow us to dispatch resources in a much more refined way, which means that our resources which are needed for most urgent situations will be dispatched to those, and we'll be able to, as Commissioner Saltzman was saying, create additional refinements where we're responding to emergencies in a much more granular and differential way. We believe that this is critical because we're seeing an unending increase in the demand for response in the system, and as we continue to deploy technology and make it easier and easier for people to call 911, we expect that demand is going to increase, and so we need to adopt this technology that will allow us to make a more discriminated choice about how we deploy the resources. And I'll answer any questions that I can. Thank
Excellent.
You.
So, Commissioner Fish, questions.
Please.
I think we've lost the ombudsman. And I wanted to just tell her, and I'm sorry she's not here, that one of the reasons that I strongly supported Measure 26-189 is we put her office into the charter and ensured that she would have independence and be able to precisely perform this function. And I did not expect so shortly after the election, where we have such a clear indication of the benefits of an independent ombudsman embedded in our charter. So, Ms. St. Helen, I know you're the interim director. And so there may or may not be questions that you can answer, but I read your response to to this report. And you say, quote, Bureau decision-making has been transparent. But isn't precisely the thrust of this report that it has not been transparent? In other words, how can Bureau decision-making be transparent if the central claim of the ombudsman is that both the public and the council have been provided with inaccurate information. How does that meet? What's the transparency standard that you're referring to?
I believe that my response or that statement was in reference to articles that are brought forward or implementation of new technology and things that go into BOEC, new programs and such. And those items have always been brought to our user board and through vetted through our city commissioner. At no point have I stated that the fact that the information provided in the past decade of statistics to city council and to anywhere has been incorrect. It has. It has absolutely been incorrect. But as far as that statement that I made, it was really pointed more towards the vetting of any new programs or technology that goes into our building.
The ombudsman says at page 5, the Bureau leadership has known for at least 18 months that the information was incorrect.
Yes, sir.
As part of your initial review of this matter, have you been able to make any preliminary determinations as to why that information was not corrected in a more timely manner?
The fact that we had a significant issue with our statistics was identified in the mid portion of November. I met with our Bureau of Technology Services the following day, and I have met with them until the fix that we're currently utilizing was implemented in November of 2016, and I met with them on a regular basis multiple times every month to keep track of what was happening to rectify the situation.
No, and I applaud that. And that in page 2 of your June 2nd response, you allude to the fix that was put into place immediately, mm-hmm. and you're to be applauded for that. But the question that I have is that the ombudsman says in her report that the Bureau was aware of the fact that incomplete information had been provided to the council and the public for almost 2 years. Have you been able to determine why that was the case?
The answer is no.
But I would, if yeah. I could for help, sure. no, I'd, help
I'd
out
like
here.
To, I'd like to first ask the interim director.
I believe that there's two parts to this problem that we recognized. And the first part was the fact that we recognized that there was a technological problem that had provided us incorrect statistics for a decade. And then we had to get that fixed. There was another issue that had to deal with how do we address this issue.
Right.
As the operations manager at the time, I was responsible for ensuring that a fix was found, for working with our BTS services and ensuring that a fix was found. I was not responsible for addressing this in a public forum or in a city council forum or
no, I appreciate that, and I did not mean to imply that you were, but you're the most senior official
absolutely,
here to help
and
us understand
and if what
it.
You're asking is whether or not I know why those decisions were made or why they were
yes.
reported that way, the answer is no, I do not know.
Okay. Just in plain English so that I can understand it, what was the fix that you implemented in November?
There is no plain English for this.
Or as simple as possible, just so we get the gist.
BTS is now able, they have implemented some type of a script, a computer script, that allows them to pull data from one entity, which is called a CDR. I don't know what that is, it's a data receptacle. And they are able to take that information, which contains the cell phone callers, and they take the information that comes in from our landline callers, and they are able to manually, and I believe that they have this automated now as well, but combine those numbers, which is supposed to give us reliable data now.
And from the moment you became aware of the problem to when the fix was implemented, how long did that take you?
Almost one full year.
Took you a year.
Took us a year, yes. There was an attempt at a fix in February of 2016, and the data that came out of that fix was clearly not accurate either, and so they continued to work on another fix.
How much of this problem would you attribute to the short staffing at the Bureau?
The problem with the incorrect statistics, none of it.
Okay.
This is an issue that came with the implementation of the XMU system. It does not have anything to do with the short staffing. The short staffing is absolutely, and the chronic short staffing is an issue, but it is not, in my view, directly related to this problem.
One last question. The ombudsman said that as a result of her findings, she concluded that public safety had been compromised. Now, anytime there's a delay in addressing a call, there's the risk of some compromise to public safety. It could be a longer period of time until an ambulance, a fire truck reaches an emergency. It could be a longer period of time until a police officer is dispatched to an incident. But that's an abstraction unless we quantify it. Do we have some way of determining whether, in fact, there was an actual compromise to public safety in on a human scale?
I do not.
And Ombudsman, is there some way of for us to determine whether, as a result of any kind of delay, something bad happened that was otherwise preventable?
That's not something I tried to determine, but as you said, there's a delay in answering, there's a delay in dispatching that results in a delay in responding and providing the care that's needed. And in an industry where it's a matter of seconds instead of minutes that matter, it was meant as the abstraction that you
right.
described.
So I appreciate that this report has a series of what seem to me to be very bold and clear recommendations, and I appreciate that the resolutions before us essentially embrace them, and we're going to move forward. I'll have a question for the mayor in a moment about timeline, because I think it's very important we set public expectation about when these things are going to happen and when we'll have code language come back and the like. But, Ms. Salinger, a question I have for you is that you've identified something very, very serious, and that is incomplete or inaccurate information coming to decision makers. Now, we are free to make bad decisions. Our system allows us to make bad decisions, but we rely on having good data upon which to make good or bad decisions. If you step back and look at this particular case that you've investigated, any lessons learned about steps that we can take in the future to ensure the public and our process that we have good data? Were there any flaws in our system on our side of the table in terms of getting good information when we needed it?
I don't think you pay me enough to answer that question.
Do we pay her or does the ombudsman pay her? I mean, does the auditor pay her? I don't want to run afoul of the charter here.
I think there are systems.
Well, I guess I would say, what are lessons learned for you about, in terms of this question, about making sure the public and the council has reliable information?
I didn't try to do a full post-mortem on this one. It was more important to kind of just get the information out there. I do think you have a number of processes already in place, which the recommendations suggest making use of, like the Technology Oversight Committee. The City Budget Office provides a monitoring role for these key performance measures, so I think they have a role to play in terms of making sure that the information that council is getting is accurate and fully accounts for the situation.
Did you get full cooperation in the course of your investigation from the Bureau?
Absolutely.
So you got what you needed?
I did. Director St. Helen in particular has always been very forthcoming.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
May I?
Commissioner Fritz.
I just want to thank, again, Lisa St. Helen, who was one of the key leaders in bringing this attention to light 18 months ago. So I appreciate that. I also remind you, Commissioner Fish, that at no time that I can remember over the last 9 budgets has the council made decisions based on, oh, the call time is fine, we don't need to worry. What we've been looking at is the staffing matrix and the extreme shortage and also the mandatory overtime in order just to cover minimum staffing. And we have, when possible, given approved more staff for BOAC. You'll remember that Commissioner Novick was very insistent on that, and we to the extent we could, approved his requests. So there's a shared acknowledgement of the problem, and we appreciate the Ombudsman bringing this forward. There's a shared embracing of we need to address both the data and the staffing issue, and that the council, under Mayor Wheeler's leadership, has allocated more resources to BOAC, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate that comment, but I don't know how the council would have reacted one way or another based on getting accurate information about call times. And at the very least, it would have allowed other third parties to come to us, raise a flag, and say this either falls below or above an industry standard. So I don't know how we would have acted differently. But in my 9 years on the council, this is one of the most sharp reviews by an independent body on the question of the quality of the information that the public and the council receives. So I'll just leave it at that. And so that what we would have done with it, I think the council, my sense is that we have not put adequate resources into this bureau, and we'll correct that in part in this budget. I think they're going to need more resources. I am actually shocked that there isn't the code structure around this. That's, I think, another great benefit of your report is that we have to create the legal code structure for this, and we have a chance to get it right now. To me, this is not, I'm not looking at this in terms of looking for scapegoats right away. I'm looking for how we can make sure that our role as an oversight body, that we get the information we need to do our job. And when I read in a report that we're getting inaccurate information, I have no idea how we would have acted one way or another. But at the very least, someone might have said that we were falling below a standard that we should be adhering to.
May I speak just to that point? You had asked me earlier if I understood why the council was given inaccurate data, specifically, I believe, in the last budget cycle. It is perplexing to me, and I have to assume, I can only assume, that it had to have been gross oversight, in that had we reported the actual data that the ombudsman has taken the time to present today, that would have solidified what we have been talking about right. for years,
yep.
stating that we need more people to help answer the calls in a timely manner, which, frankly, doesn't just serve the public. It serves our bureau and the city as well, because our folks are not getting burnt out taking call to call to call. So why it wasn't addressed, I don't know, but I am equally concerned.
Well,
so
I'm glad you said that, because the mayor and I had a similar conversation recently with our friends at the Regional Arts and Culture Council, which for the first time is going to be the beneficiary of a performance audit. It's in the queue. It's funded. And an independent team of auditors are going to come in and look at how they spend their money. And that understandably has caused some anxiety. And what Ted and I have said to our friends at RAC is that facts are friendly. If the audit determines that all your systems are working just fine, then congratulations. If the audit says that there are things where you need to tighten the bolts or do things differently, then better now than later. And I think the point you just made is, I must say, I compliment you for adding that to the record. Had we had accurate information, it would have underscored in red underliner the fact that the staffing issues needed more of our attention, and I appreciate you calling that out.
Commissioner, if I could say so, and again, I'm glad the frame of this discussion is not piling on Lisa, and I want to second what the ombudsman said. I believe Lisa has been completely forthright in my conversations with her and has been aggressively pushing for and supporting the reforms that are encapsulated in these resolutions. So I want to thank you for that, and I know you're feeling the heat at the moment.
A little bit.
And that's okay. That's leadership. We all inherit things, and we own them, and that's what leadership is all about. So thank you for that. I think it is more serious than the way it has just been characterized. I do not believe it is accurate to say that this was a staffing problem. I believe this was a failure of leadership, and I believe it was a failure of accountability, and I believe the city council was misled when the plea was made for additional staffing. That plea was actually, I believe, severely undercut by repeated statements that the data was favorable in terms of the response time to 911 calls. And in fact, what the ombudsman has uncovered is that sometimes a call that took 9 minutes to get through was counted as a 1-second call. And it defies the common sense test. When somebody says, how long did it take for your call to go through? What they mean is from the time that they dial to the time somebody on the other end of the phone picks up and says, hello, how can I help you? And to have that interpreted as 1 second, I don't know what planet you have to be from to assume that that is the right answer to the question about how long did it take to answer the call. It defies common sense. And so, Lisa, I want to thank you for your frankness and your willingness to push hard and work on addressing these issues. And I want to thank the ombudsman. She had to explain this to me. I mean, this I think the report is excellent because it doesn't delve into the details. The details are mind-numbing in terms of the different switching mechanisms and communication channels and interrelationships of different data centers. It is very complicated. And I don't want to in any way understate the importance of the work ahead. To the answer to Commissioner Fish's question to me, what is the time frame here and how do we set public expectations? The time frame is this. However long it takes to do it right is how long it's going to take. I don't think we have a clear sense right at this moment, Commissioner Fish, about exactly what it is going to take to be able to correct this serious problem. But these resolutions set the table for us to be able to do that in an open and accountable way, working with the right people to help us address this problem. I mean, there are a few services the city provides where life and death is literally on the line, and this is certainly one of them. So it's got to be a top priority, and we'll take, and I'm glad I'm hearing strong support from all members of the city council to pursue this. And Lisa, thank you again for stepping into the breach and working with us on this. I'm very appreciative of the partnership with other jurisdictions. Joanne, it's always a pleasure to see you, in any context. And the auditor's trying not to be recognized today. She's hiding behind a column, so I won't see her. But thank you. That's it. That's my tirade. That was the whole thing.
May I just ask one thing? There are some technology solutions coming. I don't want to leave the hearing with the public concern that it's going to take months to that we're not trying to address it. So would you just go into the new phone system that's going to come into play later in the year?
Sure. So every 5 years, the State of Oregon Office of Emergency Management is responsible for upgrading the phone systems within the entire State of Oregon for all the PSAPs or all the 911 centers. Most, if not all, I think there might be two or three left, have transitioned to the upgraded phone system. BOEC being the largest in the state, generally we go last. We wait until all the bugs have been worked out. And we are slated for that implementation in November of this year. We will start doing training on that in October of this year. With that upgrade, we'll bring a fix. We will be able to eliminate this pseudo manual fix that we have in place, and all data that we get, regardless of where a call comes from, whether it be landline, VoIP, or cell phone, will be collected to one portal. So we'll be able to take all of that information from one place, and we will be assured that we are reporting clear data. Additionally, it also provides us with better ways to divide out calls, and we're able to look at clusters of calls ahead of time. So say, for example, on the – I don't want to use the max stabbings. If we were to have a large-scale event and it resulted in multiple phone calls, say, for example, a car accident on a freeway, and we get a spike of 27 calls we will have the ability, I am told that we will have the ability to look at that and realize 24 of those are coming from that sector. We'll be able to pick the one that's coming from over here because we've already got the information and we're heading that way. We're still going to get to those, but we're going to get to the one over here that might be a different emergency. And so when this new phone system comes in, we'll have that capability as well.
Thank you.
And what you
what is happening about the staffing issue that we're all concerned about?
The staffing issue, last year, in order to address the staffing issue, our training department has implemented 3 academies as opposed to 2 academies. This year we are doing the same, and we have slated the same for next year. We will be, I have our training manager here. I believe we have something close to 30 people in the training pipelines right now at different phases. Looking at the numbers that we have right now, my best guess, and it is a guess, but it's an educated guess, is probably by mid of next year we're going to see significant improvement. Probably within 2 years, I believe that we could be well over the 100 staffing mark, which is where we've not been in longer than I can imagine.
And how long does it take a trainee from the first day to when they can operate by themselves?
From about, on average, anywhere from about 14 to 18 months.
Thank you.
I want to come back to the ombudsman for a second. I'm just going to quickly tick through your recommendations. Ensure performance data collection and reporting is accurate. So that's an ongoing process, correct? Mm-hmm. And it may very well include a follow-up investigation as to why information was not corrected. It seems to me, Mayor, that there's an additional inquiry that has to be conducted here. And then stress testing the systems to make sure that this and other bureaus are giving accurate information. Is that
yes.
fair?
Yes.
The Gator system, I'm a little I help me understand this. You've recommended that either there be a government accountability transparency results session to address 9/11 or a legislative oversight hearing. Or both, I suppose. But a legislative oversight hearing would be us holding a hearing for the purpose of doing what?
My sense is that the two reports that I did are just scratching the surface of the issues that are going on at the 911 center. I don't profess to have uncovered all of the problems. And so rather than stopping short here with just what I've been able to figure out, it struck me that it would make sense to do a full airing conversation, pointed questions of everyone involved to just make sure that the system is working properly, that the problems are identified, and that whatever steps that need to be taken going forward are addressed.
That could be a council work session, right?
Sure.
In fact, Mayor, my own experience is the council work sessions, because you can schedule who is speaking and structure it in a more formal way, is actually sometimes more helpful in terms of doing oversight. Even though we can't make a decision, I think as an information gathering tool, it can be more helpful. And it's also out of sequence. You do it on a Tuesday and not jammed into a busy a schedule on a Wednesday or a Thursday. Tasking the city's technology oversight committee, that's straightforward. Reassessing staffing needs, that's an ongoing question. And then codifying BOAC as a standalone bureau. That seems to me to be something the city attorney is tasked with doing, and that comes back. So, Mayor, I would just want to add one thing to your excellent resolution, which is that in the early fall, we schedule a council work session to have you update us on the progress towards the various recommendations, and with an opportunity for the council to go a little deeper into this.
Sounds good. I'll work with staffs to do that. So, Commissioner Fritz, and then let's see, how many people do we have signed up for public testimony?
Well, I believe it's possibly about 8. I think a lot of people have left.
Okay.
So, before getting that, I just wanted to note and reminder that it does serve the whole of Multnomah County. So in terms of the city attorney coming up with enacting legislation, I think it would need to be more of a potentially commissioner-led collaborative partnership rather than just our shop bringing it. So thank you, Director Fuller, for your willingness to do that. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very good. And colleagues, while we are waiting for public testimony, I want you to think about something. I would like us to adjourn about 1, because I'd like to give us a break before the lengthy afternoon session. We do not have enough of a quorum to be able to entertain emergency items, resolutions, or ordinances. We could, however, still hear the presentations on those. Commissioner Saltzman has already agreed through his staff to review the video of those options, and then we could just vote on them quickly tomorrow afternoon. So we could do the hearing and the testimony on those items today, take the vote tomorrow. So think about that. I have been pinged that we have one individual waiting very eagerly for pulled consent agenda item 624. On the Albertina Kerr and the different spokes to acquire bicycles and operate adaptive bicycle rentals. We also have a issue with regard to item number, the last time certain. We are going to lose Andrew Abbey soon. Andrew, how long can you stay?
I would need to leave at 2 o'clock.
Great. So I think we can do it in that order.
Mayor, I support that. Can I just make another suggestion? If we're going to set over the emergency items for vote until tomorrow at 2, we're losing our quorum tomorrow at 3.
That is correct.
And so could your office let us know this afternoon at 2 which of the items scheduled for tomorrow afternoon are to be set over?
So I was going to keep this secret until I was far away from the building. Our staff is already working with your staffs to see if we can start early tomorrow.
That's fine.
I knew you wouldn't like that.
But, for example, we're not going to get to the 3:30 time certain.
That's correct.
So, I mean, if we can just know what's going to be pushed off
very
altogether.
Good. Happy to do that. All right. Why don't you guys, to the degree you want to stick around or take a seat, we'll take some public testimony. Again, 2 minutes each, please.
Okay. Is there a Red Hamilton? Alan Frischhalver? Alan?
Frischweiler.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Oh, that's a W. Becky Smithson, Grace Hip or Phoenix Hip, Rob Wheaton, that's Rob. How about Brighton West,
I think some of may have made their commentary on the way out of the door. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Go ahead. Oh, okay, great. Well, my name is Brighton West. Do you need to address 3741? No? Okay, perfect. So I'm here as one of those dropped callers. I'm here because in January of last year and December of last year, I made 911 calls, once for an impaired driver that nearly hit me and once for a fight breaking out in the middle of the street. And the calls were, one was dropped, and the other was this stayed on hold to the point where it was no longer an emergency. I did notify the mayor's office at the time, who then notified Steve's office, who then notified the bureau, which I got some, sometimes we get busy. And then the second time, I notified Steve's office directly and never heard back. So I guess the point I want to make, I hate to rely on the Oregonian, especially when there's negative information, but I get here from the Oregonian this morning. Let's see here. Until this week, Bureau leaders ignored the Ombudsman's advice at the prompting of Commissioner Fish, Turley, and St. Helens dismissed the Ombudsman December findings in a March budget session before the Council. I hate to, and then actually it goes on, and Commissioner Fish says if we would have dropped 18,000 people, we would have certainly heard about it. I was telling City Council multiple times, multiple councilors about this problem. And this seems to have happened months ago, not years ago. So I guess I do want to say that the City Council needs to hold some responsibility for not listening to the Ombudsman the way she should have been listened to.
So I would like to comment that I did talk with the reporter for 12 minutes yesterday, and nothing that I said appeared in the article. Also that under my, now that, well, previously when it was under my leadership, we do investigate every concern that's brought to us and get back to the community members. So I'm sorry that didn't happen previously, but if I'm assigned the Bureau, then it certainly will be. And we acknowledge there's been many problems, and that we are committed to fixing them. And I support all of the directions in this resolution, which is why I put my name on it. So thank you.
Rob?
Okay. Rob Wheaton, Oregon AFSCME. Of course, I represent the employees at the Bureau of Emergency Communications, the 911 dispatchers. I want to say that at this moment, I have never been more appreciative of the Ombudsman as I am right now. My members at BOIC have been complaining for years that this data seems to be inaccurate. We've been told that they've cut off the top 1% is statistically irrelevant. We've been given a variety of stories that some of these longer hold times aren't really 911 calls. They're alarm companies calling in, which, by the way, is still an emergency. I mean, that could be a crime in progress. We started notifying you guys through social media of long hold times that we've seen up to 25 minutes, and this is something that we found absolutely unacceptable. So we're happy to hear that something is being done today. I appreciate the remarks that you made about let's move some things forward. I also agree with the Ombudsman that this is just a scratch of the surface of the issues that exist at that center. It seems that, you know, we just went through a long bargaining process that resulted in arbitration where we ultimately lost, but we were trying to secure wages because we can't control how this place is managed. And what we could really do to increase staffing here is change the way this place is managed, change the culture of management there, and start, you know, really, really making a difference within this system. So, I mean, I would encourage the City Council to restart the national search for a bureau director. And, I'm just happy to see that you're passing this resolution today.
Thank you. And I want to thank you, and I want to thank your colleagues. And I appreciate the conversations that we've had on this, and I definitely look forward to engaging you going forward. Thank you for your good work.
And I'd like to agree with that, and also to stress that I think all of us really appreciate the work that's being done to the best of anybody's ability in the Bureau, given the staffing situation. So thank you. Please thank you, members.
I'll pass that on for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Alan Frischwald, I'm president of the Portland Firefighters Association. Commissioner Fritz, thank you for the help on my last name. I appreciate that. just the other day, I was working, and I work out of the PSU fire station, and a perfect call that came in that you want to address. And Rescue 24 went from North Portland over to Terwilliger Terrace, and the call was to help move a patient from one bed to another. And it really does show that we go on calls that we don't need to go on. So I want to be really, really upfront that we are supportive in looking at that. One of the things that was surprising is to hear about this resolution on the news and not be pulled into part of the resolution and looking at something that would be such a drastic change. So that's really the basis of what I wanted to talk about, is that as we look at trying to change a system that has been in place, when I was hired in 2001, I think we went on 50,000 calls or 55,000 calls, and now we're going on 90,000 calls. And so it has increased a lot. My fear is that if we haven't engaged the union and really the Fire Bureau yet on this issue, my fear is that we don't continue to be engaged and not put as a key partner. Our fire chief isn't even here right now. You know, this is a resolution that he should be a part of. You know, when you look at it, one of the things in 635, it has BOAC, BTS, OMF, CBO, but there's nothing for the Fire Bureau in there. On 636, it talks about labor relations working with BOAC management, but it doesn't put the firefighters in there as well. If we are going to get involved, which I think we should, then what we need to do is get involved with everybody. And so where we have talked about GMT and ambulance service area, we really haven't had a lot of cohesive support from council to be able to push a lot of those issues. And so in summary, if we are going to do it, let's do it all together and go all in, but let's all be partners to do it.
Yeah, Alan, thank you for that admonishment, and I'll take responsibility for that. We did engage at the management level. We should have engaged you. It was wrong not to, and I apologize to you personally. We'd absolutely love to have your engagement in this process. So no disrespect intended. That was an oversight on my part. So thank you for the offer.
We don't need to amend the resolution. That's
no, we do not.
The legislative intent. And I also want to thank you back when the county was passing their resolution that you brought that to my concern. Mm-hmm. Your commissioner at the time was involved in negotiations that I wasn't part of. So, yes, I'm very glad that you'll be involved and moving forward and with AFSCME as well and the other unions like the Portland Police Association.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe that's all who signed up.
That is all. Very good. Commissioner Fish, did you have an additional question or comment?
Nope. Just look forward to voting on both.
Me too. So with that, please call the roll on 635.
Fish.
Again, let me begin by thanking the Ombudsman, who works in the Auditor's Office and is now embedded in the City Charter, for taking on this issue and releasing this report. I believe that an independent auditor is crucial to good government, and I think this report once again underscores the need to have an ombudsman that's protected in the charter, and I was pleased to support that effort. Mayor, I appreciate the diligence and, frankly, lightning speed which you brought this forward. This is one of those times where, while I agree with what you said to Alan in terms of engaging our partners, I'm glad you acted promptly and expeditiously. And there's quite a lot of reference to our friends at Portland Fire and Rescue in Resolution Number 36, and I know that we won't move forward without fully engaging our friends at the Fire Bureau, so I'm glad that Alan framed that. I made a note as the testimony was going forward about the challenges the Bureau faces, staff shortages, transition and leadership, not being in the charter, communication with council, history, regulatory issues. That's a lot. And so let's take one moment to, again, thank the dedicated employees of the Bureau for the service they give to our city. And as someone who uses the system from time to time when I see something that